Good morning. Welcome to today's mission status briefing. With us today is Lead Shuttle Flight Director Kwasi Alaborujo, just coming off his Orbit One shift. Kwasi?
Good morning. Well, the crew is continuing to have a fantastic time on orbit. Today we have finished packing of the MPLM. The crew closed it out, and as we speak, they are completing the berthing activities, which involve placing the MPLM back in the orbiter's payload bay with the space station robotic arm. What's ahead of the crew for the rest of the day is to finish mid-deck transfer. They have about another hour to hour and a half of mid-deck transfer to complete. And then they'll be egressing the International Space Station, closing hatches, saying their farewells to the station crew, and preparing to do the checkout of their rendezvous tools, which will be used for tomorrow's undocking and fly around. On the plan tomorrow, shortly after the crew wakes up, they'll be powering up the additional computers that they'll use for undocking, as well as some of the additional equipment that's required, and we'll maneuver the space station shuttle stack to the undocking attitude. And then fairly early in the crew's day, they will undock and back away from the space station while the space station performs an attitude maneuver, and do a half-lap fly around of the International Space Station, and then separate completely from the space station's orbit and conduct their late inspection activities, which involves using the orbiter boom sensor system and the associated sensor packages to look for any damage that might have occurred to the thermal protection system during its time docked to the International Space Station. Now, just to refresh your memory as to what we can expect during the undock and fly around, we do have a video clip with an animation of what we expect the two spacecraft to be doing during the undocking activities. There you see the shuttle backing away from the space station. Pilot Doug Hurley will back away to about 600 feet, and then the ISS will basically do a simple 90-degree yaw maneuver to present the off axis to the orbiter, and while the other crew members are taking pictures, pilot Doug Hurley will maneuver the spacecraft into about a half to three-quarter lap fly around, and then the shuttle will execute two separation burns to basically leave the orbit of the International Space Station so that they can conduct the late inspection activities and also set up for the deploy of the PicoSat payload on flight day 13. So this is really what's going to consume our time for tomorrow. It should be an exciting set of activities. Again, bittersweet as all of these activities are, but the team has been very focused. They've been prepared. We've gone over all of our rendezvous and undocking procedures, gone over all of our checklists, all of our rules, and made sure that we understand what we need to do tomorrow. So my team is certainly looking forward to executing the undocking activities, and that will really conclude my team's involvement in the mission. After my shift tomorrow, we'll commend the crew and the mission to the care of the entry team led by Mr. Tony Sakachi, and they'll conduct the landing minus one day activities, which include checkout of the flight control system as well as other equipment that's required for landing, cabin stow, and other activities which are standard and typical prior to our expected deorbit and landing at Kennedy Space Center. So that's a summary of what we've got ahead of us, and I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Kwasi. We'll start with questions here in Houston. Please remember to step to the mic to ask your questions, and please identify yourself by name and affiliation.
Do we have questions here in Houston?
Robert?
Hi, Robert Perlman with CollectSpace.com. With regards to tomorrow's undocking and fly around, given the different orientation that the station will be in, what type of visuals should we expect the station to have of the shuttle? Because it'll be the last time that we get to see the shuttle in flight.
Okay, that's a great question. I think the station will have very good line of sight to the shuttle as it performs its fly around from the cupola windows. The cupola provides actually a number of different angles from which to view just about anything outside the spacecraft. We should also get pretty good photography from the station as the shuttle passes underneath the station from those Nader SM windows, as well as the possibly the lab window. However, I think the lab window will end up being closed. The lab window shutter will be closed due to contamination constraints associated with thruster operation. So we should see some pretty good views from the space station. The space shuttle, we expect, will take some really interesting views of the station. Again, the station will be in an orientation that it has not been in before during the shuttle flyaround. So we expect to see portions of the spacecraft that we've never really gotten good, direct, high-resolution photography of in the past.
Clara Moskowitz with Space.com. And I'm wondering if just how cramped is it really for the four astronauts on the flight deck after they close the hatch?
Okay. For the astronauts on the flight deck, for this mission, it's no more cramped than it has been in the past. Actually, the four astronauts fit fairly comfortably on the flight deck. Of course, they are in fairly close quarters. But what's good about it is that with no crew members sort of resident on the mid-deck, the aggregate amount of space that the crew has on the shuttle is better than what they're used to. You know, when you have a crew of six or crew of seven on the shuttle without the additional volume of the International Space Station, quarters are pretty close.
Do we have additional questions here in Houston? Seeing none, we'll go on to the phone bridge. Mark?
Yes, thank you, Mark Corot for Aviation Week. I believe this is the first long-axis fly-around of the space station. I'm wondering, is there anything specific you're looking for in the photo documentation, or do you want to just kind of get anything and everything you can with the photography?
We're really looking for anything and everything that we can. We don't have any particular expectations of what we will see. However, the photographs that we expect to get will be used as all of the fly-around photographs are used for engineering evaluation of the overall health of the skin of the spacecraft. The big thing we look for is micrometeoroid and orbital debris impacts, which, of course, we expect to see and we have seen on various surfaces of the spacecraft. That's normal and expected. And when we compare photographs of certain sections of the spacecraft from one flight to the other, from year to year to year, that helps give us a very clear picture of how the spacecraft is holding up in the orbital environment that it sees. So getting these photos of the long axis, and of course we'll get some interesting photos of the truss, but it's really the off-axis photos of the main body of the space station, the lab module, the nodes, the Russian segment modules, et cetera, that will help us in our overall evaluation of the health of the spacecraft in its orbital environment.
And if I might just follow up, I guess you're essentially sort of just going over the top. Is there... you couldn't do a complete lap, I gather.
Well, it's physically possible to do a complete lap, but we've chosen to do only a half lap because of timeline constraints. As you can imagine, we've still managed to pack this crew's timeline very full, even though they are incredibly, incredibly efficient. So in order to save time, we've chosen to do a half lap fly around. Because the time that would be required with the additional time that we're committing to this yaw maneuver, because that's really what's causing the fly around time to be larger, the additional time would put us over our constraints as far as crew scheduling for the day if we did a full lap.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Marcia Dunn?
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Yes, Clutzy, you know your last shift is coming up, and I'm wondering how it feels for you and your team. If you could just sort of talk a little bit about the emotion going into your last full shift, And also what your plans are for landing, whether you'll stay in Houston or come for the landing here at Kennedy.
Okay. Both great questions. As far as the emotions, I certainly can't speak for my entire team just yet. I've been trying to keep my finger on the pulse, and we talk a lot. I think it's fair to say that we experience vacillations between intense pride at how well this mission has gone and sometimes being somewhat freaked out, for lack of a more technical term. It's the finality of our service in this mission, the finality of the program. It hits you with greater force the closer you get to the end. The emotions, I think, feel a bit more intense today than they felt back on flight day 2 or flight day 3. And I know it will be it'll feel very powerful tomorrow as we near the end of our shift after we've completed our separation burns. Personally, I feel a great sense of honor and pride at being able to serve as a shuttle flight director. It's been an extraordinary program. There are a lot of people who would love to have had the opportunity to be a flight director for Space Shuttle, let alone for the last shuttle mission. I feel intense gratitude and I'm very humbled by it. I feel an intense sense of pride at the accomplishments of my team. My team have been absolutely fantastic. I couldn't be more proud of them. And in the midst of these emotions, from time to time, I had that thought of, oh, wow, tomorrow is going to be my last shift as a space shuttle flight director. I get kind of freaked out and have this sinking feeling in my stomach that lasts about, 5 or 10 seconds, and then I go back to doing an impersonation of a steely-eyed missile man. So that's kind of what it's been like for me today, and I imagine there'll be more of the same tomorrow. Now, to answer your question about landing, made my final decisions. I'm going to observe the landing from Mission Control. I won't be traveling to Kennedy. There'll be several people, of course, doing that. But I'm going to end my career as a space shuttle flight director in Mission Control, which I think is entirely appropriate, because that's of course how I've lived not only my career as a flight director, but since I've been working in Mission Control for the duration of the ISS program. It's home. So that's where I'll be.
Thank you very much for your eloquent answer.
Bill Harwood?
Yeah, hi, Kwatsi. Two questions for me. One, in the fly around, the way I should really look at this is the look angle that you're getting. You're getting to look down the sides of the modules, I guess, and a better angle on the outboard end of the truss more than resolution, because I don't see how the resolution's any different. Am I wrong, or...?
No, you're absolutely correct, Bill. The resolution is absolutely the same. We're just shooting from a different angle that we haven't flown before.
Okay, thanks. And to follow up on Marsha's question a little bit, what are you going to do after this program ends? Have you decided whether to stay with the program, or are you going to maybe look to something else?
Well, I always like to think that I'm open to all opportunities and will evaluate them as a flight controller would based on the data. For the foreseeable future, I'll certainly be looking at post-flight reviews and closing out the activities from this mission. We actually always have a fair amount of work to do after each mission, which include lessons learned, reviews, debriefs, and things like that. So I'll be fairly busy with that stuff for quite a few weeks.
Hey, Kwatsi, one last one for me. I'm sorry, I'll make it three questions real quick. Do you know how many people on your team are facing layoffs when this mission is over?
I don't have an exact number. What I can share with you is that since the pre-flight press conferences that we did, since the pre-flight briefings, a few more members of my team have either found or been selected for positions in either in the space station world or some of the other programs that we have going. A few more of them have found employment outside. So the overall disposition of my team is better now than it was about 3 weeks ago. As far as specific numbers of people facing layoffs, there's still quite a significant number of them. But we're grateful for the additional placements that folks have been able to achieve.
Thanks, Kwasi.
James Dean.
Thanks a lot, James Dean with Florida Today. Kwasi, I guess if I recall going in, flight day 12 or tomorrow's flight day was expected to be one of the busiest. Is that, do you still think it might be the busiest day of the mission, or with the crew's success with the earlier inspection, you think things might not be as tough as they were originally expected to be?
Well, I think the undocking day, which of course now is on flight day 12, pre-flight it was on flight day 11, undocking day will still be a very busy day. They'll have a great deal of activities to do. I fully expect that even though this crew has been fantastic, they've got a bit less energy now than they did on flight day 2. They've been working really hard for the last several days, so I expect they'll be a little slower, maybe a little bit more deliberate to keep from making mistakes. The day that's going to be really packed, that has absolutely no margin for error, is what is now flight day 13, but think of it as the end of mission day minus one. That's where we do the picosat deploy and the cabin stow and check out of the orbiter's comm and flight control systems for deorbit and landing. That day in general tends to be fairly busy. That's a day that we think will be challenging to get through with the reduced number of crew, because the number of activities that we have to do that day have not decreased with the crew size, as is the case with some other days. So that's the day that we think will be really packed for them.
Okay, thanks. And I wondered if you could just update systems a little bit. I think from what I've read in the notes, it said that there's 13 hours of the cryo margin. Is that like one day plus 13 hours? And also just, again, the computers, I guess, are all up and running as they would have done
okay
all along.
All right. Be happy to talk about the cryo margin first. After we went ahead and added the additional day, now when we launched, the specification for our mission duration was essentially 12 plus 2, 12 being the nominal duration of the mission, and plus 2 being sort of contingency reserve days that we reserve explicitly for intractable orbiter systems problems that would prevent us from safe reentry, or for weather issues that may prevent us from landing at Kennedy Space Center on time. So think of those two contingency days as something that we sort of keep in the bank for a rainy day, if you will. So above and beyond the 13 plus 2, because we gained enough margin to add an additional nominal day. So the new specification for the mission is 13 plus 2. We have about 12 to 14 hours of margin above that. It's not nearly enough to achieve yet another day on orbit, but that margin is useful in the event that weather absolutely doesn't cooperate with us and we have intractably unsafe weather conditions at all of our landing sites, and we may need to extend just a half a day in order to get on a trajectory that puts us down safely somewhere in the world. So, although that additional 14 hours is not really useful for mission content, it can make a difference to the entry team that's trying to find a place to put the orbiter down in the event that we have really bad weather at our primary landing sites. Now, as far as the computers, all of the computers are in nominal configuration. Our efforts to restart GPC-4 were successful. We transitioned systems management functions back to GPC-4, which is our nominal on-orbit configuration. GPC-2, which had temporarily taken over systems management functions, that computer is now asleep in its GNC mode. And tomorrow for undocking, we will bring up GPC-2 and GPC-3 to join GPC-1 as GNC computers in a redundant set. So those three computers will be flying the ship while GPC-4 will be performing its nominal systems management functions. So nominal configuration. Now, one thing I will note is that given that we did not find evidence of a software problem or software glitch, that took down GPC-4. We have designated GPC-4 as what we call having experienced a hardware transient failure. As a result, our flight rules prohibit us from assigning one of the flight critical strings 1 through 3 to be controlled by GPC-4. We can either use GPC-4 as a systems management computer, which is what it's doing right now, or we can assign it to sort of our main data bus number 4, which has less critical equipment, less flight critical equipment on it than strings 1 through 3. So we do have some restriction on how we can use GPC-4, but the good news is the nature of that restriction is such that we can still use it the way we nominally plan to use it. It's just that we have one or two fewer options available to us in the event that we have some permanent computer failures on any of the other 4 boxes. So hopefully that addresses your question.
Yes, thanks. And just one last one. I know it's probably ridiculously early to ask you a weather question, but there is a tropical storm, I guess, off the east coast of Florida. I don't think it's expected to be a problem, but can you just say if it's something that you know is being watched and is if it's any concern?
It's certainly being watched. Tropical storms are always a concern. It is still fairly early to know what the weather at the Cape is going to do. Preliminary indications are that it should be favorable, but as we know from launch day, you never know what's going to happen until you show up on game day, lace up your cleats, and get ready to play.
Okay, do we have any follow-up questions here in Houston? Gina?
Gina Sinceri, ABC News. Remind me on this new fly around. Is that basically a shuttle maneuver or a station maneuver on departure? And if it is a station maneuver, what goes into that?
Okay. For the modified fly around, the shuttle will do what it always does, which is it will undock along the V-bar or along the velocity vector and back out to 600 feet. And then the pilot will execute a fly-around of essentially sweeping through an arc of approximately 600 feet in radius, maintaining that distance of separation between the shuttle and the station. What's different this time is that when the shuttle backs out to 600 feet, the station will turn what we call perform a yaw maneuver, which is just a simple turn to the left or right, if you will, by about 90 degrees. What's involved with that is simply for the station to execute what we call a maneuver cyclogram. Think of it as a pre-programmed, timelined maneuver that is executed by the Russian segment GNC computers that are in the service module. Those computers, at this phase of flight, actually physically fly the spacecraft. They do it in tandem with the U.S. GNC computers on the U.S. segment of the space station that provide sensor data from GPS receivers, rate gyros, all kinds of other instrumentation, which helps the spacecraft know what its current orientation is. So between the U.S. GNC computers and the Russian GNC computers, they will work in tandem. And the Russian GNC computers actually will engage the Russian thrusters to essentially turn the spacecraft by 90 degrees and hold it at that attitude while the shuttle performs its fly around. Once the shuttle separates and clears ISS airspace, if you will, those same computers will execute a pre-planned timed maneuver to turn it back to its normal orientation and go back to its standard torque equilibrium attitude where it flies routinely for the duration.
Okay, and we have other questions here in Houston? Seeing none, we'll conclude this briefing. Quick reminder that you can follow shuttle and space station activities at www.nasa.gov. Quincy, thank you, and thank you all for coming.